You look like you have a question.
Yes. Why are we doing this?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 43 for the week of September 22nd, 2014. I am sexy religious professor David T. Cole, and I'm here with 21st Lady of Swaziland, Sarah D. Bunting.
If you pass the salt now, it'll get here by sweeps.
Undiplomat Tara Ariano.
Suck a dick, Belgium.
And self-proclaimed Antichrist.
Anarchist.
Allison Lohoff.
Fight the power.
Welcome, Allison Lohoff, to the podcast.
Yay! Thank you.
We have Allison on the podcast this week because she is great, but also because she is going to be covering Madam Secretary for us on Previously.tv for as long as it lasts or as long as anyone cares. So that's what we'll be talking about today.
A maximum of 3 weeks.
Really? That's low. Have you watched? We got screeners for episodes 2 and 3 as we record this. Only episode 1 has aired last night, quite delayed by football.
Right.
Have you watched 2 and 3 yet?
I have not. I did not receive them. So.
Oh, okay. They are on their way. Mm-hmm. I promise.
Right.
Let's talk about the first episode. What did we all think?
Well, I'll start us off, which is this. How do you have a show about a high-powered lady politician that has Bebe Neuwirth in it that doesn't star Bebe Neuwirth as Madam Secretary?
Agreed.
Because that's a disparity in screen presence. Mm-hmm. When you see those
yeah.
two.
I know that some people feel very strongly in a positive way about Taya Leone. I don't. I don't hate her, but I do feel like she's a charisma vacuum. And I just don't, it's like watching a galaxy get sucked into a black hole. Like every time she's on screen, I'm like, but enough about the main character. Please get to anyone else on the show. Because I actually didn't hate it. But she's so boring, and it was so piloty. It might have been the pilotiest pilot I ever watched.
It was so slow. That was my main problem with it. And she was boring. I mean, I hate to say that, but she's very attractive, mm-hmm. I guess, physically. But it just, like, God, the drain of her talking, it was unbelievably boring.
I mean, I'm sure that's a very tiring job, but she shouldn't come across in every scene like she's just exhausted by all of it.
Is she Mrs. David Duchovny?
I believe.
Not anymore.
She was.
Not anymore.
Officially divorced.
Right. Okay. Well, that might explain the charisma thing, you know, like they probably, whatever, fed off each other's low-keyness.
That's true. She was the
sex addiction.
She was the dynamo in that relationship,
yes,
for sure.
as Futurama correctly pointed out, David Duchovny, history's greatest acting robot.
The other problem with the pilot is that it hinges on this storyline of two dumb Americans being dumb and shitty in a foreign country and getting arrested, which I guess is supposed to be a flashpoint. Like, we're supposed to be very invested in the idea that these two kids are going to get released. I kind of didn't care. I sort of felt like they were being reckless and dumb, and that's what happens.
I was actively rooting for separation of head and douche. Yeah. That's why I'm not the Secretary of State. That's not the only reason.
Right.
That's probably the lead reason.
One of the big reasons. Yeah. But that was the other thing about them. Like, they didn't even explain really to a comfortable degree, like, what were they doing? Right. It's like one of them thought he was a little activist kid, and like they went to Syria. Like, I mean,
yeah.
No.
And at the end of the episode, there's such like a dramatic like homecoming for these two kids.
Yes,
slow-mo and everything.
The kissing of the ground
was not deserved. Like, they did not sell that at all. I'm just like kind of like, really? You guys are trying to make this like, this is episode 1. We're just meeting the main characters, and you're trying to sell this tertiary character reunion that you did not set up as this big payoff at the end. Fail.
Yeah.
Yeah, they showed him sitting in a cell like twice. Mm-hmm. You know, not exactly like sitting there with the knife to the throat or anything. So,
no,
yeah.
In the next hour, Carrie on The Good Wife was in lockup in Chicago, and that looked a lot scarier to me, frankly. Honestly.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
let me ask you guys this, though. Leaving aside the casting, mm-hmm. Could anyone have made this part like awesome and compelling, because here's my issue. It's not like a lady Secretary of State is new. Mm-hmm. It's like right. we've had those for a while. Mm-hmm. It's A. B, woman tries to have it all concepts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like maybe she can't, but the thing that she does have is being the fucking Secretary of State. So how about you do right. some research about that and focus on that part and have her getting in fights with whatever, the governor from Oz. I cannot right. pronounce his name properly, so I'm not going to try it. You know who I'm talking about.
Jelko mm-hmm. Ivanek is, I believe, Thank how it's you. Pronounced.
Oh, that's right. actually really cinchy. Sorry, Mr. Ivanek.
He's Slovenian.
Yep.
Yeah, I just feel like this is a solution to a problem we don't have kind of concept. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if you guys think that the problem with the show is baked into it, or if it's just, if it's the casting or how you respond, like having had Madeleine Albright and Hillary Clinton already, were you just kind of like, and this is new how? Because that's how I was feeling.
Right. Yeah, I think they were trying to solve the problem of everyone misses the West Wing.
Yeah.
This doesn't even approach it. I mean, there was just no there, I felt like, you know, legislatively or whatever. Yeah. Like, there wasn't even that big of a mission, you know, to save these kids. I mean, I know it was like her first week on the job or whatever, the first 3 months. I mean, it just wasn't. It was very piloty, and there was just nothing to it.
It was extremely piloty and extremely CBS-y.
Yeah.
Like, is it?
Yeah. You
know, I mean.
But I should like that. Yeah? Like, I love all these, like, boring shows. This is my thing. She, like, I should be into
it. I think she is the main problem with the show, because all of the side characters were really interesting to me. Even and maybe especially her super bitchy assistant who was calling everyone out.
Yeah, I liked
Blake
him.
Was the best. The show should be about yes. him. Madam Secretary's Assistant is a show I would definitely watch. But, like, you know, Allison, you mentioned in your write-up about the first episode that she's wearing all of CJ Craig's pantsuits from 1999, yes. which she is. But
yeah, they weren't hemmed at the right length either.
No, and they also put Taya Leone in these chicken cutlets. Like, we know those aren't your boobs. Like, it's so – I was so distracted in that scene where
Sorry.
She
– Chicken – what do you call them?
Chicken cutlets. That's the nickname.
Yeah, boob inserts.
That's the nickname for those silicone falsies that ladies wear.
By Tyson.
On TV.
Sponsored by.
And Secret.
We have heard from somebody who's an actor on TV, not someone that we've ever mentioned on the show before, but that she says, like, every, if you go on a TV show, you just have to wear them. Like, you just have to. Dave has somehow never heard this term before and is dying of laughter right now.
Wonderful, wonder chicken cutlet. Rock! Wow.
My point in bringing it up is that there's a scene where she wears a turtleneck and her fake boobs are extremely distracting, maybe only to me. But, like, it's just a shame that CBS has already locked up Alice and Janney for Mom, which I do not watch, because this is, like, even if it was a total retread of the West Wing with her in a very similar role, like, no one would care. Everyone would be happy about that, yeah. I think.
Right.
Yeah, as it is, I feel like there's a lot of hostages-y elements in it, and that's never a good thing. Like, I will bet you American money the daughter is knocked up by not even sweeps, by like Halloween.
Yeah,
something's happening.
Tim Daly's gonna cheat on her by Halloween, like,
yes.
just very. And I'm not totally against their exploring these ideas, but the fact is, if it's supposed to be like a workplace drama, stick to the workplace. Like, okay, occasionally show Tim Daly with his shirt off. I'm not an animal.
Okay,
but the kids,
yes.
don't care. Like, send him to boarding school, don't care.
Every teenager on every, like, prestige show like this, send them all to boarding school. They're all boring as hell. No one cares.
Right. As a matter of fact, this is a good idea. Send them to boarding school and then have, like, a hostage situation at that boarding school.
Wasn't that already?
They tried that. It was called Crisis, and it also sucked.
Really? Yeah.
Or, hear me out. Crossover, these kids get run over by Dana and her boyfriend from Homeland on another hit and run spree.
Or they get poisoned like the kid on Scandal.
Oh.
There are a lot of ways to get rid of teenagers, is what we're learning on TV or in general.
Subscribe to the Extra Hot Great Teenage Removal Service newsletter coming soon.
You know what doesn't work? Sending them to Syria.
Damn it. Well, Allison, you have to keep watching because we're paying you to. But Sarah, will you be watching any further past the pilot?
I'm going to give it another couple episodes.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to cut it mercilessly. But it's possible that it'll get its feet under it. I doubt it because, yeah, like we said, it, like, if you don't think Taya Leone is an underrated gem, which James Poniewozik, whose opinion I respect, like, he seems to love her and he's kind of cautiously into the show because of her.
Yeah.
I wish I felt that way, but I just don't.
I saw that from a lot of people on Twitter. Like, she's America's most underrated actress. Like, is she?
No.
Based on what?
I don't know. Like, yes, she was good in Flirting with Disaster, but that was like 1996. She's had a lot of chances since then to impress us, and she hasn't really impressed me.
Yeah.
It lost me with the William Sanderson, is that the
character? Sadler.
Sadler, thank you. His introduction and super telegraphed, he's gonna die now.
Yeah.
It was just like, wow, they could have just spray painted it on the wall. It was so obvious it was coming. And
yeah, let me ask you this. Have any of your work colleagues ever given you a gentle kiss on the forehead in the middle of the night? Because that's not normal at all.
I don't know. Have you guys ever done that to me?
Maybe.
No. I would have been sleeping.
Yeah, I'm going to give this one a Passeroony. Pasadena, Tara.
Yeah, I'll watch a few more. I've made some room on my schedule, as we'll be discussing in the minis this week, so I'll give it a shot. I mean, I'm watching CBS on Sunday nights anyway, but maybe this will just make The Good Wife seem that much better by comparison.
What a strategy, CBS. You've done it again. All right, that means it's time to go around the dial. Everybody's bringing something about TV to the table. Tara, you go first.
Well, since I'm normally shitting on everything on this podcast, I thought I would give this this space to a show that I actually really like, which is Gravity Falls. I was sort of vaguely aware of it. I think we watched it in a hotel room at some point, and then our own Leanne Jackson wrote a Get On Board story about it earlier this summer when it came back for its second season, and I didn't at the time, but now we have been catching up, and fortunately, because it's a kids show, it's on like two episodes a time, 7 days a week, pretty much, so it's been very easy to catch up, and it is so cute.
It is. It's pretty funny, too.
It's really funny, and not in the way that's like, you know, like that Shark Tales way where it's like so much for the parents. Like, it's just, it strikes a good balance, I think, between kid humor and adult humor.
Yeah.
And it's about two kids voiced by Jason Ritter and Kristen Schaal who go to live with their grunkle Stan, their great uncle Stan, who runs this weird, like,
mystery spot kind of thing.
Type of place in the middle of
Tourist
Oregon.
Trap.
And then, like, weird stuff starts happening. So it's like X-Files-y. It's like junior X-Files, and it's so sweet. And Kristen Schaal, I hate to say she's ever done a voice role that I like better than Louise Belcher on Bob's Burgers, but this might be it. She voices Mabel as a real sweetie, and she's very positive and cute and not in a dorky way.
Yeah.
And even Dave likes it, and Dave hates everything. So this is my endorsement. I co-sign what Leanne wrote, which I will link in the show notes. Gravity Falls, get on board.
Yeah, when I would have eaten this up like crazy when I was a kid, and I really do enjoy it now, but it hits like so many kind of boy adventure pleasure points, but still being accessible to like the mothers and fathers and, you know, sisters as well. Like,
there was a great throwaway joke in the episode, one of the episodes we watched this week, that was about Gravity Falls loves Halloween so much that they have a bonus Halloween in summer called Summerween. And so there's a cut to the bowl of candy that their Grunkle Stan is giving out because he's so cheap. And so it's like lingers on it so that you can see it's like Count Von Discount is one. Yeah. Homework the Candy Bar is another one. Like, it's just jokes like that that are like obviously for people that are really paying attention, and it's really sweet.
Kind of reminded that those parts of it reminded me of early Simpsons, you know, where they would load up the store signs and stuff like that.
And Futurama.
Yeah. It's good. Co-sign to that one for sure. Sarah.
Speaking of Tara shitting on things, congratulations, Tara. Your Project Runway Bête Noire
was
finally
so
ousted last week.
God damn, it was so sweet, too.
She really
went out exactly the way she should. We're talking about Sandia.
Yeah.
Yes.
That I just couldn't believe. I really wanted to, file a motion for a DVD extra with her child model, who is such a good sport and totally sold it. And she's like, I really like it. And then when Sandy is gone, she's like, it's not horrible, and managed not to start crying,
yeah,
which is what I would have done. But I've actually come here today to talk about the fact that Tim Gunn is like rapidly sinking in my esteem.
Oh no.
Yes. First, there was the flagrant favoritism and like almost bullying that he joined in with during Project Runway Night of the Gun or whatever it was called. Then there was him calling the Rainway the best runway in show history. Like, that's not a thing. Mm-mm. And then Char Glover last week, like, he used his Tim Gunn save on Char, so I think he's maybe harder on her than on some people. I like her personally. She's not great. She's going to probably go home soon. But she's making like a sort of Native American inspired vest with fringe, and he called it tawdry. Like, oh. It's for a kid. It's not like she's making like booty shorts for the kid. It's fringe. Yeah. Like, the number of times in my weekly rankings that he's, like, close to the bottom and only that hag Nina is worse than him or Sadia in the rankings, it's like, Tim, you've got to pull it together. Like, you're wearing wonderful neckties and you're making no goddamn sense anymore. It makes me sad. Maybe he needs to take a sabbatical. I can't believe I am saying that, but that's where we are.
That's some tough love.
Mm-hmm.
Pause for reactions. None. Moving on. Last week, I was talking about shows that looks like we would like coming up in the fall season. I was talking about Constantine, the occultist demon hunter guy. And I was saying that as much as I sort of enjoy Hellblazer, that's the comic it was based on, it's part of, I really would have looked forward to Lucifer, the spinoff from The Sandman, as the sort of demon-centric comic book of choice to become a TV series. And lo and behold, the next day, they announced that that's in development. Mm-hmm. So you're welcome, universe, that I made that
happen.
Yep, indeed. And rounding us out, Allison.
Okay, I'm going to give Tara a chance to shit on something. I want to talk about the Mysteries of Laura. I know this is a controversial topic. I've watched it. I watched the pilot like 3 times just to make sure of my feelings.
Wow. That is thorough.
My gosh.
I could not sleep. Okay. Anyway, it's a show.
Yep.
It just could have been so good. Maybe. Yeah.
And then they cast
if only
her.
Well, it's not that I hate her, because I don't. I mean, I loved Will and Grace, but and she's still, John Ramos said in his post about it, you know, her comic timing, I think, is on point most of the time in the show. But if they hadn't cast it, if they hadn't set it in New York, I think it might have been okay. If it was English, it would have been okay. That, you know, that in England, they do this jokey / serious / you know, my boss is really the killer thing, and they can pull it off somehow.
Yeah.
This is not pulling it off, and it's disappointing, because you know I will sit and watch these things, sometimes 3 times, even if they're bad. So basically, I am going to keep watching it, but with a cringe on my face.
I watched as far as the scene where we're supposed to think it's a horrible, grisly murder scene with red stuff everywhere.
Oh,
and then
yeah,
it's paint because they're twins made a mess at school. And then I was like, this is not for me. That was literally when I turned
so
it off.
I found that so incredibly, like, insensitive and terrible. Like, it really, like, we're going to make a joke about a possible murder scene in a kid's school? Like, I just really, really?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a really missed note. And, you know, there were others. It's a lot what I'll do for a mystery, even a terrible one.
Are you, now that Madam Secretary's on, are you still doing Wheel of Mysteries?
Or no, we're going to put it on hiatus.
We're pausing that for the summer, you know, after the summer.
Oh, summer series. Great. Okay. Yeah. But it'll be back eventually.
For sure.
Excellent.
Yes.
Hi, Livy.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching episode 9 of Face Off.
Yeah.
And
before the episode even started, you were paying a lot of attention to the prizes that the person who wins is going to get, right?
Yeah.
And there was one prize that you didn't really like. Which one was it?
The car.
Yeah, why not?
Because I felt like it looked kind of weird. When I mean weird, I mean like I feel like it looks like an old person would buy it.
It's a Fiat 500.
How old is an old person?
89, 92.
So if you're 88, you're not too old?
Right.
Oh, okay. And what would you do with the car if you won?
I'd sell it and keep the money to buy a different car.
Oh, do you have a car in mind?
No.
Oh, okay.
Because I haven't seen all the cars I could get.
So we'll get back to the show. Can you describe this week's challenge for me?
They had to choose a snake, and then it turned in, and they have to make it into a soldier.
Yep, and why were they doing soldiers? Do you remember?
Because of the G.I. Joe prize pack, and it comes with the G.I. Joe toys.
And who was the winner this week?
It was Dina.
Can you describe what her snake looked like?
It was the Brazilian rainbow boa. And what am I supposed to describe next?
What did her, do you remember what her snake looked like?
No.
Oh, okay. Do you remember why she won, why they liked it?
No.
Okay.
The scales?
Yeah, they really liked the scales, and they liked the paint job, too. And who is the loser this week?
Kaylin. She was my most favorite person of the show, and she got eliminated.
Yeah.
So hopefully I'll find someone else I like.
Who's your second favorite?
Rachel.
Yeah? Do you think they picked the right winner and loser this week?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, not winner.
Who would you have chosen as a winner?
Sig.
Yeah, he had the Christmas tree eyelash viper.
Yeah.
Why did you like Sig's
snake?
Yeah.
It was because of his colors, and I liked how he made, like, popping googly eyes. Mm-hmm. It was fun. And I liked where he chose the colors. There's, like, this silver metal pieces that were shaped like human eyeballs on the arms.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really fun.
If you could pick any of your toys for them to do a challenge, a face-off challenge, which toys of yours would you choose?
I would choose... I have so many toys that I like to play with that's hard to choose, but I choose the kitchen and the kitchen set.
So your challenge would be something related to kitchens, and then they'd win a kid's play set for to give to a kid?
Or to play with their kid.
That's nice. So they would look like kitchen items?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they were... be like a kitchen sink and like a chef's hat, all that, all those details.
Yeah, because you like playing chef.
Yeah.
Cool.
I like playing restaurant with every time someone comes over. I ask them to order because I just made a menu.
Mm-hmm. You make your own menus? Yeah.
And it was really fun. It's really fun to play with people. Every time someone comes over, Ellie's the chef. And I'm the person, well, Ellie's my little sister. I'm the person who, I'm the waitress. And it's fun. And I tell her what she has to put in to make it the thing that they want to have.
Cool.
And then she gets to make it, bring it to me. She gets to make the drinks, right. Put it in the cups. It's really fun.
Nice. We've gotten off topic.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking to me about Face Off this week, Liv.
You're welcome.
And we'll talk again next week.
See you next week.
I love how even Liv was laughing. She knows they really went far afield.
David T. Cole's back at the gym, and in his first time in the change room, changing out of my dirty, sweaty clothes, completely naked for the world to see, who walks by but Billy Eichner.
Woo!
I feel like there's more to that story.
All right, so we're going to do this, guys. We're going to do the We Are All Domer thing. But here's the thing. All right, for our remote guests, when he says R, I want you to say Domer to see if we can't sync everything up with the time gaps, okay? Are we ready?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Everyone in this room is now Domer.
Domer.
For having listened to it.
He didn't say R.
All right.
There was no R.
I thought it was. All right, let's try it again.
Domer.
All right, let's try it again. Use your best judgment. Here we go.
Everyone in this room.
Domer.
Shit.
Worst one ever. Tara, take it away.
Okay. Under the Dome was stupid in its penultimate episode of the season. First of all, there's a lot more of Rebecca being angry about faith versus science and saying that she's going to figure out why the dome is contracting by doing calculations. As if any of this makes sense, or she can tie it to anything else that she knows about science. And then she snaps at somebody about how she can't answer their question with any precision because she's still doing calculations on her Microsoft Surface. And then when the subject is raised again, she will only go so far as to say it won't be long before they're all crushed into oblivion. Like, what was the point of the calculations if you can't be more precise? And the second dumbest thing was Julia, after getting a rod stuck in her thigh in the previous episode, now...
Wait, hold on.
Yes?
Sarah?
That's what she said.
Thank you, Tara.
She was walking around with a bandage on the outside of her jeans, and that is the two stupidest things that happened on Under the Dome this week.
Wow.
Yep.
Boy, oh boy. All right, we're moving along. Look at us go. Boom, 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 boom. That means it's time for the canon. Allison, you're bringing us something. Take it away, Allison.
Sure. Okay. I'm submitting for the canon the second episode from the fifth season of Star Trek, The Next Generation, Darmok. I know. Now, on the surface, this seems like a really Picard-centered episode, and it is. But much more significantly, I hope to show that it's an episode that can stand alone to represent what the show is actually about, going out into space, making contact with unknown beings, and trying to understand them. It was written by Joe Manosky, who is a very well-known writer in the Star Trek worlds, and Philip Lazebnik, who happened to also write Pocahontas and Mulan.
Oh.
So there's quite the pedigree there. So to get to it, the Enterprise is en route to an uninhabited system and meets a ship crewed by the, quote, enigmatic race known as the Children of Tama, or the Tamarians, who have been encountered by Starfleet before, but have been deemed incomprehensible each time in the past. Worf obviously wants to attack them before known hippie Deanna Troi, of course, explains that the Tamarians are a peaceful race. Worf, we must take, you know, whatever precautions. it's just no one has been able to crack the code on how to communicate with them before. So Picard, during this meeting, it must be noted, he has never been so excited about anything in his life. The man is like positively giddy, thrilled at the prospect that the Enterprise will be boldly chatting where no one has chatted before. So they stride onto the deck and hail the vessel, and here's what the Tamarians have to say in the first clip.
Rai Angiri Atluka. Rai of Luwani. Luwani under two moons. Jiri of Umbaya. Umbaya of Crossroads. Atlunga. Lunga. Her sky gray.
I mean, okay. Yeah, sure. Unfortunately, the Enterprise crew has that awkward social panic you feel when meeting a French person for the first time. They all like leering around, staring at each other. And seeing their furrowed brows, the Tamarian takes a deep breath and tries again, as you hear now.
Rai Angiri Atlunga.
Absolutely.
I sense nothing but good intentions from them, Captain.
Mr. Data, the Tamarian seems to be stating the proper names of individuals and locations.
Yes, but what does it all mean?
I am at a loss, sir.
Captain, would you be prepared to consider the creation of a mutual non-aggression pact between our two peoples, possibly leading to a trade agreement and cultural interchange. Does this sound like a reasonable course of action to you?
Beep boop.
Good air beneath, Momata.
Everybody mark in winter.
Impressions, number one. It appears they're trying their best, as are we, for what it's worth.
Not really, y'all. This episode, more than even as usual, requires that certain special Star Trek suspension of disbelief. For a show that's so picked over, there are these beautiful logic holes that, as a fan, you simply learn to accept. Like here, I mean, employing just caveman, toddler-level sign language would go a long way, but instead, the Temarian captain is forced to make the dramatic choice of transporting himself and Picard to the surface of what the Enterprise thinks is an empty planet, at which Picard is understandably annoyed. But ever the negotiator, Picard tries to talk the guy out of fighting, which he thinks is what's being proposed, to which the Temarian responds in this clip.
Darmok and Gillard. You want to fight with me? Is that it? Challenge? Darmok and Gillard.
I don't know who or what Darmok or Gillard are, but I certainly didn't come here to start a war.
Darmok and Gillard at Tanagra.
Tension.
Sorry, Captain.
When the walls fell.
So, yes, we've heard this a few times now, and the audience is allowed to catch on a little faster than Picard, but he's going to get there. So nobody knows at this point who or what Darmok is, but Shaka, when the walls fell, so clearly translates into, God yep. damn it. But back on the Enterprise, Riker, as usual, has demanded Geordi do things in 1 hour that would normally take 3 days. Riker also sends Worf out in a shuttle to bring back Picard. And this could be a heroic moment for Worf, but no. The Temarians shut him down by firing on the shuttle, but only enough to stop it so that Worf, rocking his most sensible Patty Duke haircut, can't even regain his dignity by being injured in the line of duty. Meanwhile, Data, who is a computer, yep. and Troy, who has nothing else to do, struggle to make the necessary fact-finding leaps about the Temarians, even employing the most advanced technology Starfleet has to offer, and that's what we hear in this next clip.
Well, it seems to be a point of contention between them. Perhaps something the Temarian captain proposed that the first officer didn't like.
Really? The apparent emotional dynamic does seem to support that assumption. As with the other terms used by the Temarian, this appears to be a proper noun. The name clearly carries a meaning for them.
Computer, search for the term Darmok in all linguistic databases for this sector.
Searching. Darmok is the name of a 7th Dynasty emperor on Conda 4. A mytho-historical hunter on Chantil 3. A colony on Melindi 7. A frozen dessert on Tasna 5. A
stop Michelle. Search. Computer, how many entries are there for Darmok?
47.
And I will read everyone slowly.
All our technology and experience, our universal translator, our years in space, contact with more alien cultures than I can even remember.
I have encountered 1,754 non-human races during my tenure in Starfleet.
And we still can't even say hello to these people.
Correct.
A single word can lead to tragedy. One word misspoken or misunderstood, and that could happen here, Data, if we fail.
Replay at time index 144.
Darmok at Tanagra.
Freeze. Computer, search for the term Tanagra, all databases.
Searching. Tanagra, the ruling family on Gallus 2. A ceremonial drink on Larishi 4. An island continent on Chantil 3.
Stop. Chantil 3. Computer, cross-reference the last entry with the previous search index.
Darmok is the name of a mytho-historical hunter on Chantil 3.
I think we've got something.
God, it took forever. I'm sorry.
That's okay. And let's, speaking about forever, like, how long did it take Starfleet to, like, rediscover Google?
To put in two different search terms and cross-reference
them together.
I don't
know. Like, cross-reference, my God.
Data didn't have his Boolean chip installed in time for this episode.
Needs a librarian.
Seriously.
No, exactly. Why isn't there a librarian? Anyway, back on the planet, Picard and the Temarian have had a breakthrough. And it is made clear that the guy is a friend and not a foe. And that's a good thing because an actual foe now shows up on the scene. A voiceless creature that can best be described as that alien from Predator, but kind of with the head of a Triceratops. And even as the thing is about to kick their asses, Picard and the Temarian are still trying desperately just to get on the same page, as you can hear right here.
Uzani, his army at Lashmir!
At Lashmir?
Was it like this at Lashmir? A similar situation to the one we're facing here. Uzani, his army with fist open.
A strategy with fist open? With fist open.
His army with fist closed.
With fist closed. An army with fist open. To lure the enemy with fist closed to attack. That's how you communicate, isn't it? By citing example. By Dang. Metaphor. Ozani's army with fist open.
Sukath, his eyes uncovered.
Oh my God, the relief. The Temarian captain is so relieved as he is like about to fight this dude, and Picard is bursting with pride at having figured this out. Yes, isn't it wonderful how two intelligent minds can overcome obstacles by working together? Oh shit! The monster strikes again, badly wounding the Temarian, and oops, it happens at exactly the juncture that Geordi and O'Brien get their act together and attempt the impossible to try to beam Picard back aboard through this Temarian scatter field or whatever. Except that they didn't really have enough time to figure out how to do it, Riker, so instead they lock Picard into a temporary state where he's stuck in the transporter beam and has to watch his new bestie get beat down by an alien. They finally give up and leave him down there, but Shaka, the dude, is mortally wounded. And Picard tends to him, his arms wide to get more info on Darmok and Jalad, having finally cottoned on to the fact that whatever happened to those guys is similar to what just happened to them. And they work it all out in the next clip.
Temba, his arms open. Give me more about Darmok on the ocean.
Tanagra. On the ocean. Darmok at Tanagra.
At Tanagra. Country? Tanagra on the ocean? An island? Temba, his arms wide.
Jalad on the ocean. Jalad at Tanagra.
Jalad at Tanagra. He went to the same island as Darmok. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
The beast at Tanagra.
The beast? There was a creature at Tanagra. Darmok and Jalad, the beast of Tanagra. They arrived separately. They struggled together against a common foe, the beast at Tanagra. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Darmok and Jalad on the ocean.
They left together.
They fell in
Sexy.
Love.
Isn't that beautiful? I don't know. Picard goes on to tell the Temarian the story of Gilgamesh, the epic tale on which all of this is based, and it's just Picard, the suede jacket-wearing, Earl Grey-drinking scholar and statesman, doing what he does best and finding commonality. Of course, Picard's new friend totally dies right after this. And back on the Enterprise, he has to explain it all to the Temarians, but now in their own language. Darmok and Tanagra on the ocean, blah, 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 the beast, Shaka when the walls fell. And what just an hour ago we believed was nonsense, now it's like sort of tear-jerking. So season five would go on after this to have a bunch of these communication is the key themes. But in this case, there's no Riker and Troy love story or Worf learning to be a dad or Data questioning his humanity bullshit, as enjoyable as all of that could be sometimes or not. Instead, I hope I have made my case that this episode contains the essence of both the series itself and, in keeping with today's context, Madam Secretary, shows Picard to be the greatest diplomat of all time and space.
True.
The end.
Tara, why don't you start us off?
Oh, I love this one. This is also one of my mother's favorite episodes that I feel like we watched it a lot for some reason when I was a kid. It must have come on a lot in syndication. And, you know, I certainly can't vote against this rather than risk a reception colder than a Saskatchewan winter when we are reunited at Christmas time.
That is so cold.
It's very cold.
It's pretty cold.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, it's Picard at his best. He's, like you said, he's finding commonality and being so patient and really, like, the strain of trying to understand what this guy is trying to communicate to him is brilliant. And I love Paul Winfield as the captain.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Every time, even with that weird nose that they've given him to make him look like an alien and the weird extended thumbs for no reason. Whenever he smiles with relief, that's the Paul Winfield smile we all know and have known our entire lives. And it's lovely to see.
I was just going to say about the thumbs. I think that might be the reason why this race never learned to do sign language, like you were saying earlier. Because
they were too embarrassed to show their
thumbs. Well, the other thing is, when you see the thumb in the episode, it really just looks like somebody put about four bandages on top of each other.
I was about to say, yes.
True.
Poor Paul Winfield. I mean, he was basically not only wearing the bandage thumb, but like Sears pleated front khakis and like these Army Navy cast-offs sewn together.
Rest in peace, Paul Winfield. So but if he was around today with that thumb, with that the new iPhones, you know, where he has to go way up in the corner, he'd have a pretty good time. He'd be sitting pretty.
Mm-hmm. But yes, I also love how Picard's hands-on experience with this unfamiliar language is contrasted with all the dopes on the ship.
Yeah.
I have no idea what they're doing and are really etsy. So yes, excellent pick. This is everything that Star Trek does, or that Next Generation does best, and I love this one.
Yeah, and you know, to contrast it with, say, like the J.J. Abrams movies or something, where it just became this action film, or even like the movies before that, like First Contact, where they just sort of like lost the casual pace they could take with the TV series, you know, and they just stuck as much as they could in 2 hours. It really makes me hanker for the return to TV for Star Trek, you know, and there's always rumors around that they want to do something, but I guess the movies are just making too much money because it's not happening. But I kind of feel like Star Trek is at home at TV. And certainly I think this episode proves it. And, you know, what other, you know, kind of show are you going to get an episode about, you know, language bases as the, you know, the core concept. I'm really into that kind of stuff just as an academic subject. So this
is one for the linguists.
Yeah.
Noam Chomsky's favorite episode, probably.
Probably.
Yes,
yeah.
Probably.
So, you know, even though, you know, you catch on a lot quicker than anybody from the Enterprise does, it's still kind of a fun ride. And it's something different. You know, it's I think maybe the greatest legacy for this episode in my mind is that there's a fantastic shirt from about 10 years ago that was floating around the internet of Picard with a electric guitar. And it says Darmok and whatever at Tanagra, like it was a concert with him and Paul Winfield jamming
That's
out.
Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I'll see if I can find the graphic again, but it was classic. You know, this has its silly parts in it, sort of like you see some of the dangers of writing science fiction and sort of not having enough of a sort of in the future imagination when it comes to the, you know, the Googleosity of things, you know, like that kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. That is sort of like Star Trek's cell phone for this episode.
Although there's like also a scene where Riker presents him with something in it on a tablet and it's the exact size and shape of your iPad mini.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, it's sort of a mixed bag, but I think like the core of this episode, which is about communication, about, you know, finding new worlds and new life forms and all that kind of stuff, is quintessential Star Trek. And Paul Winfield brings so much to the table as the captain. I really love him in this episode a lot. And it's kind of funny to think he was the same guy who, you know, ends up shooting himself in Wrath of Khan, because he's got a brain bug in him. But, you know, he was didn't he narrate a bunch of crime shows, too?
Yes. Yeah. He used to narrate City Confidential.
That's right. City Confidential. I couldn't pull it. Yeah.
Right.
What did you think, Sarah?
Yes.
I really liked a lot of things about this episode. I loved Paul Winfield. I loved Bedtime Epic of Gilgamesh Hour with Picard. Weirdly, that was the second Epic of Gilgamesh reference I dealt with in 2 days, which is not something I can usually say.
That's strange.
But holy shit, this was so slow. And the fact is, like, I can't unknow that Google exists, like, now.
Yeah.
But they have Google. They have Magell Google. Like, just ask the computer. And shouldn't the computer know how to cross-reference things? It's a computer. And there was just something about, like, what was it, minute 20 before they're like, hey, let's search these proper names. Like, hey, how about you do? Your boy's down on this planet fighting the ELO, basically. How about you ask the computer for some help? Great work.
You know, speaking of that.
Also, I neglected to count this. I'm sure someone has done it. The phrase Darmok and Jalada Tanagra.
Oh, I know.
I just started saying it around the house, and the best part is my husband had no goddamn idea what I was talking about, so it was just like the show. Then he's like, did you feed the cat? I'm like, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. He's like, so you fed Mabel but not Pearl. Like, sure. Mostly what
okay.
I meant. Yeah, I totally see where you're going with it, but it was like 30 minutes of episode, and it went on half again as long as it needed to for me.
Yeah,
the ELO creature, I thought it looked like the...
It's a living thing!
It looked like the mom from Dinosaurs, the Triteris.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It could have been the same costume. They never really show the creature. It's just this outline. So they might have just went down the block and borrowed the dinosaur head, stuck it on the Gorn, and they were like, well, call it a day. That's good enough, guys.
Yep.
It does drag. I mean, especially anytime it goes back to the ship. I mean, it's just like, come on, people. Mm-hmm. You know, Data, speaking of computers who want to know better, he does say several times, like, oh, if we took a little time to research things, we might be able to figure it out. But it's
and everyone's like
they,
mm-hmm.
they don't.
And then they just stand there, giving each other the side eye. Like, okay.
Like, there goes Data again.
How about you research how not to have camel toe in those uniforms, Troy, while you're up?
Yeah, I take your point that it can be kind of slow, and on rewatch, you know, maybe even a bit slower, but I still love it. I
do too.
It's a sentimental favorite for me.
Yeah,
I vividly remember watching this in like 1993 in a rerun, and my roommate's brother in college calling us like high as a kite during every commercial break to say things like, did you see the captain? I mean, like, he's smiling so much. You just so rarely get to see his teeth.
It's true.
That's not a bad point.
Yeah. I mean, it's true.
Oh, boy. Excellent. All right. Let's put this to a vote. I will say my eyes uncovered. Tara.
I will say, mine too.
And Sarah?
Sarah's fist is closed on this. Sorry.
Shaka.
No for me.
When the walls fell. Shaka. But that doesn't matter because 2 out of 3...
That's
enough, right? Season 5, Episode 2, Darmok. You are hereby inducted into the extra hot gray canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. Sarah has her winner.
Yes. The winner is Graham Yost.
Yeah, it is. He never thought he could do it.
John tried it. Tara tried it. What is finally actually going to make me watch Justified?
Old men with big mustaches.
The casting of Sam Elliott. That's goddamn right.
Sorry I stepped over that.
But Domer. It's great news. It was a very exciting day on Friday. We got that news about Sam Elliott joining Justified for its final season and romancing Mary Steenburgen, by the way. And also two screeners for Sleepy Hollow. It was like Sarah's birthday in,
it really
in
was.
September. Yeah.
And loser of the week?
Loser of the week is Daryl Hammond because he got a job, but he got a job replacing Don Pardo as the announcer on SNL. And I feel like this is going to be a real bummer to some of the younger members of the cast to like show up every week and see him there like, oh, this is what might happen to us.
No.
If our careers don't work out, we might just have to come back here and read all the names of the younger people that have replaced us. That's
oh,
kind of a drag. So, I mean, I'm glad that he has work because from what I've heard about his memoir, he's had a kind of a rough life. But yeah. Daryl Hammond.
Guys, you know what time it is?
Game time.
It's game time. Yay! All right, everybody. This is the third game time of the season. Valued guests and Tara tied up at top with 1 point each. Today, we are playing Quirky Falls, USA.
Quirky
Falls, U.S. this quiz will test your knowledge of all the shows out there that have been named after their fictional small-town settings. Shows with titles like Idyllic Lake or Ominous Tree.
Right.
Series only, no TV, movies, or miniseries are in this quiz. You will hear the years the show was broadcast and the network it was broadcast on.
Oh.
All right. You'll also find out what state, province, or country the fictional town was located in. You provide me the title of the show for 2 points. Now we're going to do things a little differently this week. If your first guess is wrong, you get a guess for 2 points. If your first guess is wrong, then I'm going to give you a hint in the name of one of the stars of the show.
Aha!
All right? So you're going to get two guesses here.
We get a lot of information.
Yes.
Excellent.
Well, some of these are really hard without a hint. Okay. So I don't want to rob you of the hint just for the chance of the 2 points.
Got it.
All right. So does everybody understand how that's going to work?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
If there are any words in the title other than the name of the town and maybe the state that it's in, I'll let you know.
Okay.
All right. So if there's some extra words in there. So here's an example using a non-fictional title, a non-fictional place. 1990 to 94 on CBS takes place in Arkansas. Any guesses what that one's called? It would be a place. The hint is Burt Reynolds was in this.
Evening Shade?
Evening Shade, yes.
That was the name of the place?
Oh. Yeah.
Huh.
Wow.
Yep. I never knew that.
Evening Shade is a real place.
Oh. Huh.
Yes. Everybody. So that's the idea, huh. But we're going to deal with fictional stuff.
Okay.
We will start with valued guests.
All right. So we'll go Allison, and then Sarah, and then Tara. Are we ready to play Quirky Falls, USA?
Yes.
All right.
Fist
Allison.
Yes.
2006 to 2012, on the Sci-Fi Network, this show takes place in Oregon. What's the name of the show? It's going to be a place name. You get a free guess before I give you the hint. Or you can just ask for the hint if you don't know. You can say, Dave, I don't know. Just give me that hint.
I think she's off the call.
Oh, we
oh,
lost
no.
her.
Seriously?
Oh, there she
I was. Sorry.
All right.
She's back.
She's back. Okay, so here's the question again. 2006 to 2012, on the Sci-Fi Network, this show takes place in Oregon. What's the name of the show?
In Oregon.
On the Sci-Fi Network.
On the Sci-Fi Network.
Yeah. You get a free guess.
I feel like I know this.
It's a place in Oregon.
And it's on the Sci-Fi Network. And it's, you know.
All right, I'm going to give you the hint.
Okay.
Colin Ferguson is in this show.
Oh, God. I have no idea.
That show is Eureka. Eureka.
Oh, of course.
Canada's own.
Damn
Colin
it.
Ferguson.
All right, Sarah.
Yes.
1997 to the present. Whoa. On Comedy Central takes place in Colorado.
South Park.
2 points. All right, Tara.
Yeah.
You know what? I forgot to say who this is by. So I need to mention that this game time comes from Matthew E., who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great topic of his choosing. All right, let's get back into it.
Yep.
And this is yours, Tara.
Yes.
2003 to 2012 on the WB and the CW in North Carolina. North Carolina. Oh. The title of the show contains words
One
other
Tree
than
Hill.
Any. That's good for 2 points.
Nice.
All right, Allison.
Okay.
to the present on the Hallmark Channel takes place in Washington. That's your stab in the dark on this one.
Rainy Falls.
That's a great guess.
All right, here's your hint. Starring Andy McDowell.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. I should know this because I've seen the commercial, but I don't know.
Anybody know it?
Frequent Tara Twitter punchline, Cedar Cove.
That is true.
Oh.
All right, Sarah.
Uh-huh.
1994 to 1997, syndicated and on UPN, takes place in California, and this title has other words in it other than the name of the town.
Gosh. Babe Shore Nights.
All right, here's your hint. Brittany and Cynthia Daniel are in this one.
Oh, God. Remember her?
Yeah.
Remember them?
Yeah.
They did go away, though. Amazing. Babe Shore Days. I don't know.
Sweet Valley High.
Oh, right.
All right, Tara.
Of course.
Yes.
95 to the present. Channel 4 and E4 in England. Good luck. Some of these are tough.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Want a hint? Going to forego
Rectory Lane.
Yes.
All right. Nick Pickard.
Nope. Does not help.
Oh, him.
Hollyoaks.
Nick.
Hollyoaks.
Hollyoaks. I actually have heard of that.
All right. Back to Allison. Are you ready? Here's a tough one.
Yeah, I guess.
All right. 1989 to 1990, the short-lived CBC show takes place in Ontario. Best of luck to you.
Okay.
Don't say Medicine Hat. That's in Alberta.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shit, you guys.
I really want to guess Windsor
Canadian
Terrace.
Canadian Frost.
All right. Your hint is Mike McDonald.
Yeah. Y'all are not nice people. Yeah. Cold River.
Great guess.
The answer is Mosquito Lake.
That was only on for 1 year?
Yep. Huh. All right, Sarah, here's a little bit of a different one. The year 2015, this is a show that's currently filming, has been announced on the Fox Network, takes place in Idaho.
Idaho.
Yeah. So it's
Twin Falls.
All right. Your hint, Matt Dillon's in this. What upcoming show is Matt Dillon in? Do you know?
Lone Falls.
Tara, do you know?
No.
Wayward Pines. Wayward Pines.
Oh, yeah. I did know that.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
1982. ABC, California.
Just the 1 year?
Apparently.
Ooh. They never canceled anything back then. That must have sucked.
Saddle Ranch.
Starring Linda Hamilton. Yeah. Good luck. Never heard of it.
No.
King's Crossing.
Nope.
King's Crossing. All right. Back to Allison.
Oh.
1968 to 71 on CBS.
Sure.
The Madam Secretary Network. This takes place in North Carolina and has other words other than the name of the place. Ooh, there's a hint here. He actually says other than the name of the town. So there you go. It's actually a town.
Oh, God.
Proper town.
So something, something, North Carolina? No.
Nope.
Something, something county?
No, the name of the town's in there. But it has other words. But yeah, it could be something like that. Do you want the hint? Let's get right to the hint. Ken Berry.
Oh, of Mama's family, I think.
Oh.
So it's Ken Berry Falls.
All right. So the answer is Mayberry RFD.
Oh, sure.
Oh, my God. I will now go die in shame.
All right.
You're not
Sarah.
The one who referenced Mama's family. I think that's Tara's
true.
Job.
I wasn't going to say it, but yep. 1990 to 1991, ABC takes place in Washington State.
Washington State.
1990 to 91. Two seasons.
Gosh. Tacoma Falls.
Starring Kyle MacLachlan.
MacLachlan.
Oh, that's weird. Why did I think it was on later? Twin Peaks.
That's good for 1 point.
Nice.
I'll dig it.
Tara.
Yeah.
91 to 92, NBC Indiana.
Is this... is it Erie, Indiana? Oh.
2 points. Yep. 1998 to 99, Allison, on the WB, takes place in California.
98 to 99? What are these short things?
There's really so many place name shows we have to choose from.
Yeah, but...
What we're discovering is place name shows might be one of the kiss of death along with pun title shows.
I'm sure I will have heard of this one, but I don't know. So I'm going to say, Baywatch.
Okay, your hint is Paul Mark Gosselaar.
Oh, sure. don't know.
That show is Hyperion Bay. Hyperion
wow.
Bay.
Oh yeah. On. That one sank into oblivion.
All right. Sarah.
Yep.
2002, one season. ABC took place in Nevada.
Oh.
Your friends made
Nevada?
It. Yeah.
2 points. All right. Bring us into our first score break. 2003, Tara.
Yeah.
CBS takes place in New Hampshire. Title of the show has words other than the name of the town.
New Hampshire.
Holy shit. I've never heard of this. Wow. Crazy. It's long. I'll give you that hint. It's a long title.
Concord Avenue.
Hint. Randy Quaid. Everybody's favorite.
Randy Quaid?
Actor fugitive. Randy Quaid.
I have no idea.
Answer. The Brotherhood of Poland, New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, I
sure
guess.
I never saw one second of it. All right, Sarah is in the lead with 5. Yeah. I have 4. Allison, looking to get on the board.
All right.
Yes. God.
So let's see
okay.
if you can get on the board with this one. Mm-hmm. 1990, one series.
This is not fair.
NBC takes place in Pennsylvania. Got a guess?
Is it?
Yeah. What's in Pennsylvania? Was there a show called King of Prussia? No.
It's really a shame.
Your hint is Bonnie Hunt.
Oh. Is it a... Oh, Pennsylvania Falls. I don't know.
Grand. The show was called Grand.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right, number 17.
Spread Eagle.
For Sarah, 2009-2010 on the American Broadcast Company...
Yep.
It took place in Massachusetts.
No.
Massachusetts, as we used to say.
Well, it is not Boston Common. That is not my guess. It took place in Massachusetts.
Yeah. 2009 to 2010.
Harvard Yard.
Starring Rebecca Roman.
Romaine.
That is... Yeah, okay.
Harvard Technical Institute.
I don't know. Eastwick.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Number
did you that long ago? Shit.
Yeah, God.
All right, number 18 for Tara. 1996 to 2001.
Okay.
Oh, God. BBC One took place in Ireland. It's a show from a foreign land. Got a guess?
Coronation Hamlet.
Stephen Tompkinson.
Nope, does not help.
Tompkinson. Stephen Tompkinson is actually his name.
Still don't know.
It's a show called Bally Kiss Angel.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
That's a lot of syllables.
All right. 2001 to 2002, CBS. Takes place in Washington, Allison. This is a good one.
Go ahead and give me the hint.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Ooh.
Oh.
And that was... Hold on. Wait. What Tara just did was a hint, too.
Accidentally, but it was.
She went, ooh.
Wolf Bay.
Oh. Oh. That's so close.
Wolf Lake.
Come on.
We'll give you a day point. A day point for almost getting there.
Please give me a day point.
All right. So, Sarah.
And a Tara point.
1980 to 1981 on CBS takes place in Tennessee. Show contains words other than the name of the town. Tennessee. Got a guess?
Harlan County, USA?
Your hint, Michael J. Fox.
What?
Yeah, I'm going to guess a pre-family ties.
Tennessee Valley Authority?
Palmerston, USA.
Sure. Oh, Christ.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
1994. Oh, excuse me. 1994.
Right into the mic.
To 1995.
Okay. Belcherville.
CTV takes place in Texas. I'm going to guess it's probably CTV and some other network. This smells like a... If this is CTV as in Canada? Is there a country? Is that also an abbreviation?
There's a CMTV, but it wasn't called that.
All right. Well, I'll give you the hint that this is not obviously just a Canadian production.
Okay.
Okay, 94, 95, Texas. And show contains other words.
Black Harbor.
Hint, Scott Barstow. Barstow.
Oh, him.
Nope.
All right, that was Lonesome Dove, the series. Although the show was named after a fictional town in Texas, it was actually set in a different fictional town in Wyoming.
Okay.
All right, that was a tricky one. Number 22 for Allison. 1997, one season. It was syndicated. It took place in Ohio. Good luck. Contains other words.
In Ohio? Yeah.
I'm going to just skip you right to the hint.
Okay.
Martin Mull. Not going to help you. Yeah.
Huh.
Never heard of this.
No.
Cuyahoga Falls.
Fernwood to Night.
Oh. Uh-huh. A revival, I guess.
Oh, wait a second.
That's an old show from like the 80s.
From the
70s. Yeah, it brought it back.
Was on for one season.
All right. 1997 to 2003, Sarah. ABC, New York.
I thought you said 95.
New York. New York. Oh, why don't I know this? Because like
there's 10,000 shows that take place in New York.
Albany Hills.
All right. Your hint, John Lindstrom.
Oh, the great John Lindstrom.
Yeah.
What?
Probably.
New York.
Yeah.
Let
me...
what were the years again?
97 to 2003.
Yeah, it's... I don't know.
I believe this is a spinoff. The show is called Port Charles.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Yeah, Port Charles.
And Joe's banging his head on his desk right now.
I have to call Allison back. She dropped again.
Crap.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. You back?
All right. Yep.
All right, so...
It's to me.
All right. One sec. All right. 2013 to the present, Tara.
Yep.
The network is Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Pennsylvania is where this takes place.
Is it Hemlock Grove?
That's good for 2 points.
Nice.
All right, Allison. 1999 to 2000, from our friends at PAX TV, takes place in Washington.
Oh,
yeah, exactly. Your hint is Cameron...
I think it's Dado.
Dado?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. D-A-D-D-O.
Angel Lake.
Close.
I like that guess.
Hope Island.
Really?
Hope wow, that Island. Is close to Angel Lake.
Yeah.
That was the same
2000,
thing.
2000, USA Network takes place in Arizona, Sarah.
No other words in there?
Nope.
Desert hills.
Your hint, Brian McNamara.
Desert gullies.
That show is Manhattan, Arizona.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Brian.
2006 to 2007. The network is Global or ABC Family.
Okay. You know how Global is.
Interesting. Okay. Global, ABC Family, YTV, or SoapNet. I'll show this show. Depending on where you lived, when you're watching it, it either took place in Manitoba or New England. I actually would know the answer to this. This was a bit of trivia I knew.
Okay.
All right. So there's your big hint. 2006 to 2007 took place in either Manitoba, Canada, or somewhere in New England.
Danger Bay.
Hint. Steve Byers. Byers.
No.
Yeah. The answer is Falcon Beach.
Oh.
So they shot two scenes for each.
That's right.
And they did one with Canadian Geographic references and one with American Geographic references so they can sell it.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
NAFTA.
All right. Back to Allison. 2013 to 2014 on ABC Family. This show takes place in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Give me a hint.
Tyler Blackburn. Tyler Blackburn. The recently canceled show from ABC Family.
Oh, gosh. I feel like I know it, but I don't.
Ravenswood.
That was terrible. It's a pretty Little Liars spinoff, I think.
Okay, Sarah. Yes? 2013 to the present. This show on Sci-Fi takes place in Missouri. Can I just say a thing about... I think about Missouri is that I was always told that's the way, and I've never heard anybody from Missouri actually say Missouri.
How many people do you know from Missouri?
Well, I worked with a couple back in the publishing company we used to work at and others. Anyways, if you have things to say about Missouri versus Missouri, please contact your local library. Your hint, Sarah, Grant Bowler. Grant Bowler is in this show. It's on the air right now on Sci-Fi. The show takes place in Missouri. Science fiction, Missouri.
Space. Lewis?
Wow.
Ah, I love that guess. That's such a better title.
But you're right. It does take place in St. Louis. It's called Defiance.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
All right. Bring us into our score break. 1996 and 1999 on CBC takes place in Nova Scotia, Tara. Yeah, another one of them Canadian shows about middle class people doing jobs.
And then the hint is going to be
Cynthia
Dale.
Yeah, close.
I have no idea.
Rebecca Jenkins.
Same thing. That is Black Harbor. I'll take one hint and 1 point. Okay, I have 7. Sarah has 5. Allison still looking to get on the board.
Okay.
Not fair.
All right, we're...
this is a hard one.
Yeah, this is not easy.
It is very hard, and like all these one-season shows, not that I would be doing
okay.
Any
really screwed
it
you
was,
over.
Okay, Allison, here you go.
Uh-huh.
1979 to 1993.
Come on. Oh, shit!
CBS, the state it takes place in is California. What's the name of that show? Long-run show.
Knots Landing.
Yeah!
Atta girl.
All
there
right.
you go.
Thank you.
I would have guessed Chips.
Don't thank us. Thank Aaron Spelling.
Chips. Can you imagine if Chips went into 93? That'd be awesome. Okay, Sarah. 2001 to 2011 on the CW and the WB take place in Kansas. This should be a gimme, I think. I think you know this one. You just got to think about it.
Smallville.
Yeah.
2 points. 2006 to 2008.
Yep.
CBS, also Kansas. That's for you, Tara.
Okay.
Need a hint?
Unfortownable.
You'll know after. I think Skeet Ulrich.
What were the years? 2006 to 2000. Oh, Jericho.
Yeah, 2006, 2008. The Peanut Show, Jericho. Yeah. All right, Allison.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I guess.
2009, CBS, took place in Washington.
What is with all these Washington shows?
Seriously.
Who knew?
Because they shoot in Vancouver and they set them in Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I'm guessing.
Just in 2009. Give me the hint.
Elaine Cassidy.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Good old Elaine Cassidy. you know, Pine Wood Gulch.
Close. No.
I'm glad we got
Harper's Island. Harper's Island.
Oh, that thing.
Okay, I do remember that.
Okay, Sarah.
Yeah.
1993. CBS, Montana. Everybody's getting this round. Everybody's getting the one season wonder.
Butte Hole.
love that to be right.
Yeah. Okay, your hint, Chelsea Field.
Oh.
Guys, somebody's stealing your car, by the way, in the background.
I know. I wish they'd just get on with it. Big Sky Place.
Angel Falls. Tara, 2010, Comedy Central, Pennsylvania. One season.
Well, it's not Crod Mandoon and the Flaming Sword of Fire.
Oh.
Or is it? hint.
Horatio Sands.
Oh, I have no idea.
Big Lake.
Oh, yeah, Big right. Lake.
All right. Big one. Big long one. Well, not big long. Anyways, Allison. 64 to 69, ABC, New Hampshire.
Poor Allison.
Might get this one after the hint. You never know.
Okay, give me the hint.
Mia Farrow.
The soap. Peyton Place.
1 point. All right, Sarah.
Thank you.
81 to 82 on NBC, Ohio. Contains other words.
Hint.
Barbara Eden. I will also give you the additional hint that somebody has mentioned the name of this show in this game time.
Hmm. I know it.
I know you know it.
I dream of Jeannie Stan.
Let us know what it is. Allison.
Is it Harper Valley PTA?
Yep, that it is.
Damn it.
All right. 88 to 91, Tara, on the Columbia something-something, and takes place in California.
Okay. 88 to 91.
Yep.
Cop Rockford.
Starring Lee Horsley.
Matt Houston.
That show's Paradise.
Okay.
Paradise. Okay. This is a foreign one that I think has a possibility of being answered.
Oh.
1990 to 1996 on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, also on Disney, takes place in Prince Edward Island. Also contains words other than the name of the town.
Is this me?
Yep.
At Tanagra.
90 to 96? Yeah.
CBC up in Canada and Disney takes place on Prince Edward Island.
Prince Edward. Can you give me another hint?
Sarah Polley.
Oh. Still, I feel like I know it, but I don't.
That show is, anybody?
Avonlea.
Road to Avonlea.
Or Road to Avonlea. Yeah. I think it was known by both.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
All right. 79 to 85, Sarah, on CBS, took place in Georgia. You know this one. 79 to 85 took place in Georgia on CBS. What's the fictional show? It contains words other than the name of the town. What do you got?
Is this the Rockford Files?
Your hint, John Schneider. Schneider.
Oh, it's starting 79, really? Duke's Hazard.
Good for 1 point. All right.
That's not a city, though.
Huh? Hazard.
Does that matter?
Hazard.
It's a county.
Yeah, it's a place.
Okay.
All right. Here's a note for you, Tara. Note, this title has the names of two fictional towns in it! Exclamation point.
Oh, great.
2008 to 2011.
Yep.
On BBC One, over in England, it says.
Heard of it.
The show contains words other than the names of the towns. Good luck. Never heard of it.
BBC.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Olivia. Olivia. Hollinan.
Nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Nigel Simon.
Exactly. Yes. Of course, this is the show rolling off everybody's tongue. Lark Rise to Candleford.
No! No kidding.
Oh, my goodness.
Lark Rise to Candleford. That's what she said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, she did.
Allison, 2014, okay. This has not been broadcast as of this writing or of this quiz on the Fox Network. Takes place in California.
If it's what I'm thinking of, I think it premieres this week.
Yep, I think it does.
Oh, no.
All right. So this year, Fox, California.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure I'll kick myself. Give me a hint.
David Tennant.
Oh, is it that remake of Broadchurch, but now it's called...
What is that called? We wonder out loud.
Frick. We were just talking about this last night. God, something's with a C. Like
I'll stop you there, because it doesn't.
C's friend G.
Yeah. Grace Point is what you're trying to pull.
Oh,
Grace
Point. Damn.
2005 to 2007, Sarah. All right, I don't really... Oh, okay. Takes place, unspecified tropical island. Network is not here. He said that some don't... He can't... You know, whatever.
Lots of information.
I don't know. This is terrible.
What are the dates again?
Yeah, 2005 to 2007.
Okay.
Unspecified tropical island. Name that unspecified tropical island. I'm gonna Wait. I'm going to give you the hint for free, okay? Free hint, because there's no network. Tracy Scoggins.
Oh. That fictional unspecified island.
Tropical island.
Tropical island. Scoggins Isle.
Okay, I will give you the additional hint that the first thing is possessive. It is somebody's something. Any guess? All right. Be out of your misery. Dante's Cove. Dante's Cove.
Yeah, never.
No, I'm sorry. 2000 to 2001, Cinemax, Someplace on a Coast.
Boob Gulch.
Ooh. Caroline Ambrose. Cinemax.
Yeah.
Passion Cove. Another cove.
I was really close.
We're in the cove section. God. All right, Allison.
Okay.
2012 to the present on Disney XD takes place in Oregon. Mentioned already on this very episode.
Oh, no. That doesn't. That should make a difference, but it is Angel Falls.
Very close. Oh, no. Your hint is Jason Ritter.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Well, it's just a testament to how much people pay attention to when Tara does her picks. That was Gravity Falls.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I did.
All right, here's your last question, Sarah. Mm-hmm. 2002 to 2006 on the WB takes place in Colorado. I think you'll get this one. This is in your wheelhouse. 2002 to 2006 on the WB, Colorado.
My mind is just emptied of shows. May I have a hint, please?
You may have a hint. The hint is Treat Williams.
Aww. Everwood.
That's good for 1 point. And our last question. Tara, 2010 to the present on the Sci-Fi Network takes place in Maine.
Is this one Haven?
Whoops, yeah. Wrong button. It is Haven.
Damn.
That is worth 2 points. So let's get them scores.
Oh, boy. Well, Allison had 3, Sarah had 9, and I had 10. Extremely close, extremely hard game.
All right, so are you ready for our shits and giggles? This was to be our tiebreaker, but let's do it for shits and giggles. Kind of a tough one, I think. Okay. 1992, shout when you know it. It was syndicated. Remember when shows were syndicated? Aw. Takes place in New England. Starred or featured Sarah Michelle Gellar. Anybody know the name?
Oh, it's the one from the past. It's a historical thing.
It's a name of a bird.
Yeah.
Something crossing.
Swan's Crossing.
Swan's Crossing is correct.
Tara.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We brought CBS's first-term political drama, Madam Secretary, before the House Committee of Wasted Potential before going around the dial with stops at Gravity Falls, Allison, Project Runway, Lucifer, and The Mysteries of Laura. Our six-year-old international face-off correspondent filled us in on the latest episode of Face-Off, yes, as I said. Dave laid his tiny triumph bare for all to see, while Tara explained why we are all domer for watching Under the Dome. Allison pitched us Star Trek The Next Generation's Darmok for the canon, and the extra hot great gang was all Sukat, his eyes uncovered. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Small Town Game Time, and a tough one at that. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano...
You suck a dick too, Lichtenstein.
Sarah T. Bunting.
I consider this an act of bore.
And Allison Lohuff.
Angel Falls.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great. Billy saw my meat.
Oh, no.
Billy saw my meat. I made no dreams come true. Billy saw my meat.
This is the worst.
Oh, dear.
Wow.
See you in space, Lewis.